Mr. F.S. is a 53-year-old male patient who presented to another hospital with 1 month of progressive dyspnea that has exacerbated 4 days prior to presentation. So it's a little bit of a subacute to a chronic situation. The dyspnea was present initially upon mild exertion, and 4 days prior to presentation to the outside hospital, he had dyspnea at rest and productive cough of whitish secretions. He denied any fever, chills, or rhinorrhea. Everything was negative according to the data we know from the outside hospital. He had no orthopnea, PNDs, lower extremity edemas, pains, GI, GU, musculoskeletal. His past medical history was some hypertension, possible hyperreactive airway disease, surgical history, nothing, non-smoker, and his occupation was a teacher. On physical exam in the outside hospital also, previous to our admission to our center, he was afebrile, however, he was quite hypoxemic. He had on physical exam diffuse bronchi and some crackles. However, he had no lower extremity edema and no clubbing. Okay, so the initial workup in the outside hospital revealed some leukocytosis, of course, with a polymorphic nuclear shift. He was not anemic, chemistries were normal, and the cardiac enzymes and the markers, so on, were negative. This is his chest X-ray. So we are dealing with a middle-aged man, non-smoker, occupation not impressive, nothing else in the literature, in the past history, and so on, which was impressive. He had possible temperature and the leukocytosis, and he had subacute course of progressive shortness of breath, and he was quite hypoxemic. This is his chest X-ray. Of course, this chest X-ray, if anybody would like to comment, we can't count much on this X-ray. I mean, the right side looks a little bit more hazy. Maybe there is some silhouetting of the right diaphragm and possibly some congestion. His lung volumes are not that good. So this is an AP film, and you know the limitations of an AP film. So it was interpreted as increased cardiothoracic ratio, some congestion, and infiltrates more on the right side. An echo was done, which was normal, in essence, some minor diastolic dysfunction. However, he had some mild pulmonary hypertension. Okay, so the question to the audience is the following. What's your differential diagnosis at this point? You have subacute dyspnea, productive cough, hypoxemia, crackles, leukocytosis, and infiltrates. Is it voting now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think? This is infection, pneumonia, community acquired? Is this heart failure? We have some mild diastolic. Is this occupational? Is this rheumatic? Or we don't know. Okay. So, I press?
Excuse me.
We have the... So it's infectious. The I think the majority has voted for... Yeah, infection. Okay, this is quite all right. I mean, we have leukocytosis. We have possibly fever. We have, although the history is a little bit subacute, he has some sputum, and we have infiltrates. So I think we might have some enough criteria to label him as most likely a pneumonia. Okay, so he was admitted in the outside hospital for possible community-acquired pneumonia. Okay, he was started on ceftriaxone and levofloxacin, antiviral, diuretic, and steroids. You know that the majority of the, sometimes when we are a little bit faced with difficulties, we might like to start everything on every patient, so diuretic, steroids, are becoming fashionable to us. Besides, wide coverage for bacteria and possible viral situations. Okay, 2 days later in the outside hospital, this patient remained sick. He did not improve, neither clinically nor radiologically, according to the x-rays there. So, second question for the audience. 2 days later, after starting the practically everything in the book, of course not everything, but most of the things in the book, antibiotics, antiviral, steroids, and diuretics, this patient remained quite sick. So what do you do? You wait and pray, as some of us might do. You do a CT chest without contrast, CT angio chest, talk to family and write notes, as we like to do sometimes without looking at the patient as much nowadays, or in certain instances, we keep on talking to families and we keep on writing notes because our hospital is happy with these things, and we might not look at the patient, or you consult Dr. House for opinion. So what do you choose in these questions? You have been watching the Dr. House sometimes? Anyway. ما بيان؟ ما أجا ليه ما أجا دكتور هاوس؟ طلع؟ ما طلع عنه. So, whatever. So, the panel has chosen
CT chest. Yeah.
Of course. You have a chest x-ray. Chest x-ray is so a little bit nowadays becoming, unfortunately, quite primitive. We deal with this every day. We would like to have a CT chest on all our patients practically, and we would like to have CT sometimes every other day on patients. So, of course, we would choose a CT chest. CT angio, some of us have chosen CT angio. It might be okay, but regarding the history, subacute, and the infiltrates, I think pulmonary embolism is not that high on the differential, so we would probably do a CT chest. Whether we do it by contrast, it will make us feel better about the possibility of no emboli, or it will show us the parenchyma to a better extent. So a CT chest was done. Okay. So interpretation of this chest x-ray. We have disease on both sides. So this is a diffuse lung disease. We have definite ground glass opacifications because we can see the vessels behind these hazy lung markings. So this is what we call ground glass opacifications. You know, the new CT has furnished us with a lot of new terminologies that we are becoming used to, and I hope the ultra CT or the micro CT in the future will not also give us much more interpretations of certain things on the CT, because we have ground glass, we have three embod, we have mosaic, we have other things. So this came all after the introduction of the MDCT 65 and the 264. So anyway, this is mostly ground glass opacification, and we have some infiltrates, more on the right side, maybe some nodules, maybe some alveolar fillings, and so on. This is the last, I think, for anybody who would like to comment further. So, what is this? Okay. So let's just throw two slides, I think, about the causes of diffuse ground glass opacifications. Ground glass opacification is a very, a term that will encompass many diseases. It can be an acute course or subacute and a chronic course. So you can have practically anything in the book that causes ground glass opacifications. All right. So other tables have divided also ground glasses into a possible opportunistic, chronic interstitial, like hypersensitivity, DIP, smoking-related lung interstitial lung diseases, sarcoid, acute alveolar, and others like lipoid pneumonias, BOOP, bronchoalveolar carcinoma, and so on and so forth. Okay. 4 to 7 days, patient was shifted from ceftriaxone to piptazo and vancomycin, levofloxacin and antiviral were continued. The dyspnea improved mildly. However, he remained quite hypoxemic. Day 7, he worsened. Okay, dyspnea and increased oxygen requirements, and there was no change in the chest X-ray. So what was the differential diagnosis at this point after 1 week of intensive treatments, chest X-ray, and a CT scan that were done? Hospital acquired now, okay, after a few days, resistant organisms. We are not treating the right bug, or non-infectious etiologies. Interstitial lung disease, lipoid, CTD, lymphangitic spread of tumors, and so on. Okay. So further workup in the outside hospital was really quite helpful. It revealed mostly a negative connective tissue, non-reactive PPD, negative galactomannan, and negative HIV serology. So the third question to all of us is, what should we do next on day 7? Still, we can wait and pray, because we have given everything, maybe not everything. We still have anti-TB or anti-whatever, and then we can go home. You escalate antibiotics to cover MTR, ESBL. You can add anti-TB, antifungal, and then go home because you have done your job. You can repeat the CT and the echo. Perhaps you might find something new. And again, you can talk to family and write notes and forget about the patient. Or you can do a bronchoscopy and a bronchoalveolar lavage. Okay, I think this should be clear cut to all of us. The guys will vote toward, talk to family and write notes and forget about the... No? Ah, okay. So you'd like to go for a bronchoscopy. This is great. Of course, we should go for a bronchoscopy. What are we waiting for? Okay, so... Okay, excellent, definitely. The bronchoscopy was done. Cytology was mostly lymphocytic. Pneumocystis was negative. Stains were not revealing. He was shifted from Piptaz. I saw that all the you know, drug companies will be happy, from Piptaz all the to meropenem. Antifungal now was added, and they had some ESBL E. coli in the cultures. So whatever about the case. Okay, day 10. They are still the same. The patient is still. And imagine this nice patient who was holding for several days, still sick, without, you know, everybody in the country or our Minister of Health knowing about him. So anyway, there was no clinical or radiologic improvement. He received also 3 days of pulse of steroids. Why not? Give him whatever you think might help him. The bowel did not reveal anything, and so on. So after 2 weeks, this patient is still sick with all the CT, chest X-rays, all the antibiotics, all antiviral, cortisone, diuretics, antifungal, whatever it is. So what do you do next? Question number 4. Yes, you can wait and pray also. Why not? And or you can repeat the bronchoscopy and biopsy and possibly get ready to put a chest tube if you are unlucky. You can repeat the CT. Perhaps you find something new. And you can keep talking to the family and writing notes. And you can do an open lung biopsy. Thank you. So let's go for open lung biopsy. Okay. This is the open lung biopsy. The overall lung architecture was preserved. There was mild chronic inflammatory infiltrate within the pulmonary interstitium, mainly macrophages. Macrophages were foamy and they contained eosinophilic granules. So there were presence of eosinophilic granular material within the alveolar spaces that stained strongly with PAS. And, you know, PAS stains a lot of things. But in this particular case, this is question number 5, lipoid pneumonia, amyloidosis, hemorrhage, proteinosis, or cryptogenic organizing pneumonia. Let's vote, please. So it's one of these. Okay. All right, so we have some interesting...
Third, maybe. We have organizing pneumonia, we have proteinosis, and we have amyloidosis. Okay.
So, actually, this pathology is quite classical of proteinosis. The PAS, the periodic acid shift reaction positivity, in this case, is quite classical of proteinosis. So, if you think that this is proteinosis, then what is the treatment now? Another voting for the audience. No treatment, so you can wait or pray and pray again. You keep on praying for a month. You can give GM-CSF replacement therapy. You can give immunomodulatory agents. You can do a plasmapheresis, or you can do the lung lavage. Okay, so this is the shower. This patient took a shower, and he breathed better. We showered his lungs. We lavaged his lung, and he did beautiful. So let us get this quite straight. We are dealing with pulmonary alveolar proteinosis. What really a tough situation. So in brief definition, it's a rare, it's defined by the alveolar accumulation of surfactant. So the surfactant is quite abundant in the alveoli. Okay. And it's impaired, it's increased accumulation and impaired clearance of the surfactant by the macrophages. Okay, it can be also mostly hypothesized. It's due to defective GM-CSF signal in the alveolar macrophages. This is why GM-CSF is one of the treatments of this terrible disease. So you have three kinds in brief. Majority of the patients are autoimmune, which is our case. You have some genetic, where there is some problem in the receptor, and you have secondary to a lot of issues around us, viruses, pollutions, and other diseases. But this patient looked to have an autoimmune pulmonary alveolar proteinosis. Diagnosis, symptoms are not specific, dyspnea, cough, chest pain, clubbing. Also on chest X-ray, you see this symmetrical bilateral alveolar opacities without air bronchograms. This is interesting. You wonder, this is alveolar, why shouldn't we have much of air bronchograms? Anyway, however, on the CT, the crazy paving pattern is quite remarkable for these patients. Crazy paving is like, you know, superimposition is defined, of superposition of a linear pattern on a ground glass opacity. It's called crazy paving. So crazy paving is not that specific for proteinosis. It can happen in some cases of pulmonary edema, diffuse alveolar hemorrhage, lipoid, and ARDS. So it's not that pathognomonic, but the radiologist, if he figures it out and the patient fits the case, then this is a probably classical case of proteinosis. All right, so its PAP is under the interstitial lung diseases usually, or the rare or orphan. You get a history, you get a physical exam, you get pulmonary functions, you do a chest X-ray lab, high resolution, then you do a transbronchial. If you get it, then it's much better than doing an open lung biopsy, and you can go to a proteinosis. Lavage usually is milky, cloudy, more lymphocytes. You have foam macrophages with eosinophilic granules, and electron microscopy has its own things. So this is the lavage, the cloudy or milky appearance of the lavage in proteinosis. Lung biopsy usually is patchy, PAS positive material, and this is it's quite pathognomonic. In the recent literature, it's announced that you should have at least one of the major, two of the minor, and if you have the, you know, titers of GM-CSF antibodies, and you can exclude secondary, then you get the diagnosis of autoimmune. So how do you treat it? Okay, we'll stress on the coming few minutes on the shower because of lack of time. This is the whole lung lavage. We cannot go into much details. At the end of the presentation, we'll have some references and on the YouTube, also from Cleveland Clinic, how to do the lavage. So you can go to these references if you like. Anyway, it's interesting to know that in 1958, in New England, there was the first report of proteinosis, and then they used to lavage the patient awake and percutaneously. And then in the mid-60s, they went under general and local first, and then under general, and from the 90s on, we get the usual, you know, what we do now, the modern whole lung lavage. Okay, so this is a cartoon that will point to the team. You should have, of course, the anesthesiologist, the proceduralist, pulmonologist, you know, and the rest of the monitors, the dependent. It can be done supine, but still most of the literature prefers the lavage lung to be in the upper. In the upper, you know, and he's lying, and the upper lung is being lavaged because this will drain the milky fluid. So this is what happens usually. It's but it can be done in the literature also. It has been done supine. We did our patient in the decubitus position. Okay, so you get this liters of fluid warmed, and then you you lavage the independent lung, and then you get it out, and you allow for ventilation, oxygenation, and so on, and you can go up to liters of lavage, and finally till the thing's clear. Complications: there are, of course, complications of whole lung lavage. You can get hypoxemia, pleural problems. You can spill to the other lung, and you can have a lot of other complications. Steroids, just to mention, are contraindicated in proteinosis. They have untoward effects, and proteinosis is reported to be also a cause of immune deficiency. So patients can get opportunistic infections and proteinosis. So we had one major problem in this patient, how to do the lavage. However, the lavage was done. Okay, and after the shower, our patient underwent right, which was the where the disease was, of course, more than in the left. He had close to 7 liters of normal saline, and you see the change in the, you know, till you get clearer and clearer lavage fluid. You stop then the you stop the procedure. He was extubated 24 hours later. He was discharged home 4 days later. Pulmonary functions before discharge were normal. And his chest X-ray on discharge looked like this. And his CT scan, even after 1 month, looked like this. And thank you. And these are the references. Thank you very much. Questions? Anything? Thank you. Well, he was quite hypoxemic, and you know, there was the feeling that he might respond. He was quite stable. He was not like going that much downhill. I think at that time the physicians in charge maybe did not want to take the risk of a, as I said, of a transbronchial in case he had the pneumothorax or bleeding. Then this patient will be, I mean, an open lung biopsy, of course, is more under control because you can control the anesthesia, the post-operative complications, chest tube, and so on. Whereas if you have problem under transbronchial and you are not prepared in such a diffuse, hypoxemic patient, then things might get not in in the physician's favor. And there was the hope probably that Baal might have given the diagnosis. Baal, as you know, can give diagnosis in certain selected cases, but of course, a biopsy is. We would like to do biopsies. I agree, and, you know, but Baal can definitely diagnose certain like infections, PCP, or other things. This was probably the physician's look at that time. He was never intubated. This guy spent 2-3 weeks stable. Stable, but open lung biopsy, he was doing very well, extubated, and so on and so forth. He was put on some non-invasive, I think, at certain times, but he was really, really quite, relatively all this disease, quite stable. Stable in the sense, I mean like of... Yes, this is a very good point. Thank you. The literature... actually prefers, there are a lot of issues here. The tendency is to do bilateral lavage. If you can do a bilateral lavage, this is definitely recommended. At the same setting, in the old days, they used to, you know, be like, do it, and then after several days, you do the second one. Now, the literature definitely will support you if you want to do a right, and then you follow it a few hours later by a left lavage, for instance, in this patient. What is the other question is, when do you do the second one? You do not do the second one. You do not do the second one unless the patient gets symptoms. Again, you do not do the second one just because you would like to lavage the lung. No, you wait. You wait till he is symptomatic, much more than if you see something on the CT or on the X-ray. This is not the indication to repeat the lavage. And many patients will do quite well with only one lavage. Some of them will need more than one lavage. And when you get to resistance from lavages, then you have to go into the other, treatments that we mentioned. There is the GM-CSF supplementation, subcutaneous, and so on. And there is the plasmapheresis in certain instances, the immunomodulated therapies, and some lung transplant, of course, if the things are quiet. But still, lavage is the first standard care in such cases. Question? Ah, Dr. Khoury. Actually, the risk of recurrence. Yeah, it's along the same question. This is not a curable disease. So the patient does have proteinosis. No, not much. The literature provides that, as I said, that majority of patients will, quite a big proportion of patients will only need one lavage in their life. Yeah. No, some of them will become symptomatic. And this is why the other treatments, in resistant cases to the lavage, they will need the other, like GM-CSF supplementation, like immunomodulatory agents, like plasmapheresis. These all have been, GM-CSF is a well-known treatment for such disease. And of course, these are resorted to when the patients recur and keep on recurring. Otherwise, the whole lung lavage would have done the job without resorting to other more expensive medications. Lavage is done, in the operating room. There is the team, the anesthesiologist, the pulmonologist, and the others. There is bags of saline, big bags of saline going through, being warmed. And then double lumen intubations. We did our patient, actually this was the second case we have done, and we learned from the first case. And this patient was on the decubitus side. He was intubated double lumen. The fluid will go into the non-dependent lung. Then there is aggressive chest physiotherapy by clapping. Some do it by vest. And you have to clap on the patient so that he will drain all the milky and all the material. And then you start collecting from the, through the suctioning. You are ventilating the other lung. And you clamp and unclamp during the procedure. You have to look at, many things, many complications. But usually it's done, it takes close to 1 to 2 hours, depends. And we had 7-8 liters in this patient, and the output cleared, and then we stopped the procedure. I'm sure we have also spilled some saline into the other lung, and because the other lung also improved. So I'm sure, I bet that there is some spillage to the other lung during this massive volumes of saline going into the non-dependent lung. I bet there will be something going into the other lung, and then you probably improve both. But if you would like to do it double lavage, you can do it at the same time.